Welcome everyone to today's podcast episode. My name is Adam Case, your host, and we aim to educate, inspire, and connect South Florida with the industry authorities within their trade. You're listening to the Home Design Podcast, and we're going to dive into everything on why hire an architect and all about the architect profession and the relationship with homeowners, all with Artie Molinari, AIA Fort Lauderdale Chapter President. Artie, thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me. And that sounded amazing, by
the way. Was it official?
Yeah. I mean, you've done that like a thousand times, but just I liked watching you do it.
I love having the best of the best in our studio. You know, the Home Design Podcast is all about bringing together the industry, educating our listeners, and really diving into sometimes the easy questions for the professionals and what we assume everyone should know, but really, I feel like people don't know.
Yeah, I agree.
So we're covering that today. But before we get into all the whys and all the questions and all of that, let's dive into might be the most difficult question of the day. Okay. Who is Artie Molinari?
Oh, man. I was just giving a presentation in Miami the other day at a BOMA event. And the first thing people want to ask is, where's the accent from? I've been living here for 17 years. I was actually born here. But I was raised in England, Essex, specifically in the countryside. And I guess from having a New York father and then living here, like I said, half of my life, it's mellowed out a lot, my accent. So, sometimes I sound like I'm from the country. I definitely could sound Australian. So, it's English, British, whatever you want to call it. I'm a licensed architect in Florida. Got my bachelor's degree of architecture from FAU. In Fort Lauderdale and Boca Raton, where the main campus is. But I did get my associate's degree from Broward College, and then I transferred to the Boston Architectural College, where I thought I was going to get my degree from and my license from, but life happens. I have three beautiful children. I was married, not currently, but I've had a great life here thus far, and it just keeps getting crazier and crazier, and I couldn't put myself in a better position, to be honest with you.
No, it's amazing. And you're in a position where, you know, you speak with not only, you know, so many people within the industry and the construction industry and materials and everything goes into it, but the architect professionals who are here in Broward County, really South Florida. You obviously, you know, you're communicating with architects from all over the country, probably all over the world. But did you always have a passion for architecture or design or construction? Where did that start?
Yeah. So even though I wanted to be a professional footballer, as in soccer, that dream was just kind of always in the background as, you know, an athletic child. But 9 years old, I think I told my mom, like, I want to be an architect. She was like, great choice. She was like, either that or a lawyer, because you just argue all the time. But, right. I've always had a passion for drawing, building, Legos, you name it. My dad was a contractor, so I was in construction for 7 years before I even went into architecture officially, like at the academic level. So I love, even today, DIY, using tools, building things. That's probably never going to go away.
Right.
And then every architect's dream, I think, in my opinion, at least with me and all my friends, is that, you know, there's no better gift to yourself than designing and building your own house. Like, if you haven't done that, I almost feel like you can't call yourself a successful architect. So that's still a dream. And
that's amazing. And what are you doing today? Like, what are you working on the day to day? What type of position? I know, obviously, I want in a little bit, we'll dive into your, you know, what it's like to be the president of the Fort Lauderdale chapter of the AIA. But, you know, what are you doing day to day?
I do a lot. I have a W-2 position for Tremco Incorporated. They're a building envelope manufacturer focusing on roofing materials and systems, as well as waterproofing on walls, foundations, openings, things of that nature. They're a global company on the New York Stock Exchange, Fortune 500. So I'm very privileged to have a job with them, where I pretty much help their sales reps in the Florida region. I go on conferences and do presentations in front of large crowds, basically educating to what we can do, but a non-advertising way.
Right.
It's a lot of fun. And that has given me opportunities to give back a lot more too, because they actually, from a business development standpoint, encourage us to join organizations. And I just so happen to already have been heavily involved with AIA, been on the board for the last decade. So it was almost fitting. Now that I'm president of our local chapter, it kind of makes my job with them easier, because it gives me, or at least validates, the credibility that I've been trying to establish while living here for a long time. Then I have my own business, All Terrain Architect LLC, which I started in 2020 after I left my last firm, which was Gallo Herbert Architects in Deerfield Beach. Bill and Brian, who are the owners of that company, great guys, mentors, learned a lot from them. But it was at the beginning of COVID that made me want to make that transition. And honestly, if COVID didn't happen, I don't know if I would have had the courage to do it as soon as I did. So, and then ironically, I got recruited off of LinkedIn or through LinkedIn for Tremco almost instantaneously. So I just, I'm a yes man a lot of times. It's hard for me to say no to things, and especially when it's an opportunity. So I definitely jumped on that.
Right.
And next thing you know, I like almost more than doubled my income overnight when I had just had my wages reduced by 40% 3 weeks prior. So that was a crazy time. But having babies and, mortgage to pay and all that good stuff, I was just like, whatever, bring it on.
Right.
Bring it on. So.
Now, COVID did crazy things for a lot of businesses, for better, for worse. But it's the people who really made the best of the situation that have really, evolved and grown their businesses. Yeah. And, we can speak to that as well, as far as who we are as a company to what we were before that. But, when you're talking about, the AIA and really for the people that might not know what the AIA is, let's first explain, what is the AIA?
Okay, the acronym, American Institute of Architects. That's what it is. I know there's a massive insurance company with right. the same acronym. No, that's not. And they see it on like soccer jerseys and they're like, oh, is that you guys? No, not quite.
We're not sponsoring that yet.
Yeah. I mean, we do have 100,000 members worldwide. I would say 95% of them, though, are in the United States, because that's where it started. America over 150 years ago. So it is the most prestigious, it is the architect organization that you would want to be a part of if you are a licensed architect practicing, definitely in America, but honestly internationally now, because there are chapters, there's London, Hong Kong, Singapore, other parts of Australasia and Europe. So it's, I mean, we're not just focused on the USA now. I was just at a leadership summit conference in DC last month, and all the leaders from those chapters globally were at that event, and I got to meet them and network with them and talk to them about the things that they do in their organizations, and it's really cool. When I first joined AIA over 10 years ago, I had no idea what I was getting myself into or even how special it could be. I just thought it was a formality, something that, maybe if I didn't try, it wouldn't have been a big deal. And if I did try, then at least I could maybe see how it could leverage my career. But honestly, it's been so much more than that. People always ask, well, especially some of my closest friends, I hope they listen to this, what is membership doing for me?
Right.
When you're a student, the membership is really cheap. It's actually free for the first 18 months. And we help you out with all the events so that you can attend them for free, including our national conference. But then after that, we assume you get licensed or you're on that track. And if you're not, then we have an associate level where, again, in my opinion, very affordable. And if you have a business, guess what? You get to deduct it, so why not?
Right.
And then when you do get licensed, it is close to $700 a year, but I'm in other organizations which are way more expensive than that. So the fact that it's the one that, arguably you could be the most passionate about or take the most advantage of, I don't see why you would join it, even if you're not going to be an active participant like I am. So.
Right. And it seems like it kind of legitimizes someone as well. Like if they are a member of it and they're a part of it, whether they're attending every event or not.
I forgot to mention that. Yeah, having AIA after your name as a licensed architect is sadly huge. People want to see it.
Right.
If you don't have that after your name and you're a registered architect, then you would put RA for registered architect after your name. But most people don't know what that means either. It could mean registered accountant or something. Right. You know, people just don't know what the acronyms mean. However, in the construction and design industry, everyone recognizes AIA.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely.
And they want it. Yeah.
So architects don't have to be a part of it.
No.
Okay. As far as, you know, what the AIA is constantly doing for the trade. You know, I know that, you know, we were just at an amazing event last week, you know, between CEUs, between just becoming familiar with the products and the how-tos and everything to really keep everyone up to date. You know, let's talk a little bit about like what the AIA does, you know, aside from the fun events. And I know you guys just had a soccer tournament and there's so many great things that are happening to build camaraderie and, you know, really just bringing people together. But the educational component that I feel like is the most important part of it, because if you just left educating and becoming familiar with products or, you know, how to do the installations up to people, I feel like we would never advance.
Yeah. I used to think the education part was the most important, and it may still well be, because every architect has to, you know, achieve at least 12 continuing education units a year. To maintain their license, at least in this state. And every firm, whether you have licensed practitioners on the team or not, they will have a series of educational events that, for the most part, have to be AIA approved. We used to call it accredited, but now approved. That basically means manufacturers, representatives, or other companies who are offering education on particular products, systems to deal with structures, infrastructure, design in general. They'll come in and educate, and not only are you learning, but you're getting the credits. But it's also a huge networking opportunity as well for the reps that are coming in. That to me is the bare minimum. Like when I worked in offices and that would happen, in the very beginning, it was we would joke about it and call it a free lunch.
Right.
And a lot of architects still do that. Even when I go in as a Tremco representative educating the staff, and then people are like, wait a second, aren't you the local president chapter? Like, why are you doing this? Or as if it's beneath me or something. I'm like, no, man, like this is fun. Like the fact that I'm going to be the one speaking to it, you
right.
know, I could maybe make it more interesting. But for me, legal is huge now. So we have a component called trust. It's the AIA trust, and it has nothing to do with a trust set up like a will.
Right.
It's to do with the whole legal and protection and insurance aspect. Like we all have to have, you know, errors and omissions insurance, we call it. It's our general liability for being a professional, designer. And they have all this education now to do with that, but also a support structure with lawyers. I forgot the names of the firms that partner up with us now, but they're on YouTube, they're on other platforms where they're literally giving you that one-on-one advice for free, but it's more part of the membership, right?
Right.
So coming out of school, I mean, we're not actually in school, we're not even taught this stuff, and then out of school, it takes us years to even get, educated on that whole front. So it's honestly, people who aren't licensed, they probably never have to deal with this. They might not even care. They're right. just in their own little bubble, and that's fine. But to me, the liability and the litigation that's taking place in construction, it's huge. It's a business.
Right, absolutely.
So I mean, you can ask more questions to delve into that. Otherwise,
I'll get
passionate about
it. It's kind of like the fast track to make sure that you're doing all of the right things becoming a professional, because, you know, those are, as you mentioned, those are often the things that in the areas that are not part of a curriculum when you're becoming an architect. You're obviously learning.
They should be, though.
Right.
I mean, the profession doesn't want to scare students off. So I get that. I appreciate that. But I mean, whenever I get invited to go teach, which is rarely because I don't have a master's degree in the, like, I feel like that's the criteria. You must have at least a master's or PhD to teach nowadays in universities. But when my peers are like, no, we want to bring Artie in because he's like you know, he's very real world, but he's also passionate. He's also compassionate. Right. You know, I kind of give that full spectrum. Plus, I'm a father, so like that helps too. I know how to nurture and kind of sugarcoat things. But at the same time, I always do the sandwich effect. I'll go in strong, then I'll be nice, and then I'll finish strong, or mix it up depending on the student or whoever that I'm talking to, emerging professional. But it's, I think they need to know,
right?
Because you spend, you know, 5 to 7 years of your life spending, you know, potentially $100,000 or more on an education, and then you get out into the real world, and it might not be what you dreamed of.
Right.
So that's an issue. You know, I don't want to send anyone out there who doesn't want to do this. You know what I mean? You need to know what you are signing up for in advance. Kind of like the army. Like,
right.
You know, you better know what you're getting into.
Yeah, without a doubt. Would you say the legal component of it is the one area that you wish you knew more of coming out of school? Or is there another area that's like, you know what, this is like a huge void in the educational component?
Construction. There's only a handful of schools that I'm aware of that make construction a part of the curriculum. There are courses and some classes that you have to take that are mandatory to be eligible to take the ARE, which is the architect registration exam. But for the most part, those classes are, they're very mundane. They're not at the level, in my opinion, that where they should be at. So that's another thing. When you go into a firm as a professional, even if you're not licensed yet, you don't know what the heck you're doing. And they kind of expect you to. You're literally thrown into the deep end, which is great if you're excited, passionate, and ready to be, you know, the best architect you can be. But if you're like kind of behind the scenes and you want to go on the slow track, that's how you make mistakes.
Right.
That's how contractors are able to take advantage of architects and owners, whether they mean to or not. And that's what leads into change orders and things of that nature.
Well, what would be an example of it? Like, are we talking about like the basically what's being specified into the final product from the architectural stage?
That's like one of the easiest ones. So every time an architect will specify, say, let's start as generic as flooring. Anything on the interior probably won't be a big deal. All that comes down to is money,
right,
which is fine. You're not going to really destroy a building usually by the interior materials that you specify. But when it comes to the building envelope, things that are happening on the outside of the structure that are supposed to protect the structure and maintain the indoor air environment, that's when it gets critical. And if we're specifying, I'm saying we as an architect, like specifying something that we know is generic, it's worked on many other projects, but we haven't really looked at it, it could be outdated,
right,
might not even exist anymore sort of thing, that's when contractors say, ah, I got him. And then they'll provide a submittal. We're supposed to review it, approve it, or actually now we've changed the language to say reviewed it, because whenever you approve something, now you're on the hook for it.
Right.
So that's another liability thing that we've changed, and the AI has helped. Just the language in which we write in documentation, that's huge as well, because when it goes into court, and I'm not saying if, it's when,
right,
we have to know how to speak accordingly, or at least have an expert witness to help defend us in those situations. Because most of the time, and I would say 99% of the time, architects are doing the right thing.
Right.
But there are just many small instances where a contractor's not wrong by saying, you know what, they definitely dropped the ball on this one, and
right,
they can hold us to it. So.
No, absolutely. And unfortunately, in today's world, everything is about pointing fingers, who, you know, who created the issue or wherever it goes. So, you know, a big part of any profession is knowing the language that goes on documentation and everything. So,
yeah,
you know, for better or worse, I mean, it's something that everyone has to know, but you know, it's a big part of everything now. You know, talking about the association and everything else, like, you know, so you guys, you know, obviously you have the educational component, you have the legal component, you have the event component. Is there anything else that, you know, that people will get from being members of the AIA?
Yeah, I mean, you said the word camaraderie earlier, and that doesn't have to just go back to events. My best friend who lives in New York, we went to school together. he went back home. He's originally from the Bronx. Hopefully he's listening to this, so he knows what I'm talking about, and everyone else will know too. But he asked me all the time. He's like, are we allowed to curse on here, or should I keep it PG?
Go for it. No.
And he's like, Artie, why do you do this shit? And I'm just like, what do you mean? He's like, you're like a single dad with three kids. You have two jobs, maybe three. Like, you know,
right.
Why even dedicate the time to this organization? Like, what does it do for you? You know, almost like he feels bad for me or something. And I'm like, honestly, man, I got the education part. I do have this legal assistance. Those are things that I definitely need as a business owner. So I'm grateful for that. The $700 membership is already paid for right then and there.
Right.
But the event part, yes, I probably do spend, especially now as president of a chapter, 10 hours a week minimum dedicated to whether it's administration, phone calls, emails, and then going to the events and averaging out over the course of a year. And I was doing that before I was president anyway, so I already prepped myself for that. But I said, I don't have the money to give back to, say, charity like I want to yet. I'm not at that philanthropy level yet.
Right.
And honestly, when I give my time back in this manner, it makes me feel good. And if I'm able to get my kids involved, which most of the time, as you've seen, I do.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's amazing. They love it. They get to see what daddy does. And I truly enjoy it. So if that's in any capacity, a way that I am contributing to society beyond just being a traditional architect, it makes me feel good about it. I go to sleep and wake up every day feeling good about myself. Whereas in New York, you're probably pissed off a lot. So
right. I'm sure.
Maybe he was speaking about himself.
Right, exactly.
But no, it's...
Maybe he's trying for you to convince him why he should.
Yeah, and he's asked that exact question before, but it still didn't work. So
right.
We'll see.
No, that's funny. And then, you know, so obviously for, you know, the architects we spoke to, is there a resource for, you know, homeowners or people who are building or looking to build where they can reference the AIA as like a source of finding the right architect for them?
Yeah. So, and you actually pointed this out to me on our own website, lacking in that region, because I thought we before had a link where you could easily, and we do, I think we fixed it. And if we didn't, we're going to do it immediately. but most chapters have those links available. Where to find an architect, how to hire an architect, which is the right architect for you. That is always been an issue because where we live, literally here in this kind of Fort Lauderdale, Broward County market, anywhere from West Palm really to Miami, and it's going to be the same Tampa, Orlando, Jacksonville, any large metropolitan area. Most of the architects are doing commercial work.
Right.
They don't want to do the residential because we've got all those massive developers taking care of that already. But you have 90% of buildings, believe it or not, are already like existing in the stock.
Right.
We call it the building stock. So those people who definitely don't want to sell, but they or at the same time, they just want to upgrade their own residence. Those people need architects all the time. And no one wants to do that work anymore.
Right.
I just so happen to take advantage of that. And I would say that's where 80% of my business income comes from, is taking care of those renovations. You know, a seasoned architect, it's, you know, they don't have the time. And they honestly, because their overhead is so high, they can't really afford to even take on those projects. So really, it is nice if the younger architects handle all that work. But honestly, that's a huge business. I mean, think of all the condos along the beach on that 100-mile stretch from West Palm to Miami. When we had the economic collapse in 2008, they said over 40% of those were vacant.
Right.
Guess what? They're not now.
Right. No, it was crazy. I mean, I remember back in 2008 or 2009 or so, going into 2010, you'd go down Brickell and all the buildings were dark.
Ghost town.
Yeah. No lights on. And then investors started coming in, buying entire floors, things like that, you know. And then obviously in today's world, it's crazy. I mean, there's this building and buildings are full before even they're built.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, I'm going to segue off from that exact point in the sense of, you know, for the people who are remodeling, making additions, building a house, let's first answer what exactly is an architect? Like, what are the responsibilities that an architect has from the beginning part of the process? And when do you bring an architect in? Do you find the contractor first? Do you find the architect first? Like, where does all of this start?
Yeah, so traditionally in the US, you want to hire an architect first. You go through the design and then you get a contractor in. Not towards the end, like sooner the better, because then they can help with pricing. And then you can create documents, drawings to submit for permit. In the UK, it's actually the opposite. Most people already know a builder. We don't really call them contractors, but we'll get a right. builder and they'll say, you know, look, I've done this house, this project, and they know architects, and then they refer them the business. So it's actually almost easier. I have found myself working both ways in Florida. I love it when a contractor brings me work, because then I didn't have to do anything. It's like guaranteed at that point.
Right.
They're like, listen, we're only going to use RT. We don't want to use anyone else, because we've done dozens of these projects with him. You're going to love him. He'll be fine. He's also affordable. And then they love that too.
Yeah.
But what is an architect? So it's funny. I'm working on the City Hall project for Fort Lauderdale right now. They have a third-party company that does all the research to justify and create a whole development package, as to basically justify the project. And then you've also got the people who are working in the city that want the project, and then they're bringing in students, the community, all these other people to help kind of make it happen. And it's funny, because when you talk to some of these people about what they think an architect is, they're like, oh, yeah, you do blueprints.
Right.
We haven't made blueprints in 30 years or more, like since we became digitalized in the 80s, like there's no more blueprints. Nothing's blue anymore. Like the ink is black and it's on white paper. And that is actually still quite astonishing, considering how far we've come with technology, with VR, and we're still printing
right.
pieces of paper with 2D drawings on it, even though we're doing all of this BIM and you know, virtual reality stuff, even in the field, to find conflicts or make sure things work, it is still ink on paper,
right.
which is wild. So architects are doing way more than just creating those drawings. Honestly, they are the facilitators of the entire project. If you try to do an addition on a house with just a builder, they are going to have to go out and find either what they would call an expediter, which is to help them get the drawings through permitting as quickly as possible, and they're going to pay them sometimes an arm and a leg, which is crazy. And those people, when they struggle to answer or respond to the comments that the city provides, the feedback basically that is stopping the project from happening because there are code issues or right. things like that, guess what? They're going to now need a licensed design professional, whether it be an architect or an engineer, to fix them.
Right.
If you've got to that point already, you've kind of gone way against the grain, because now you're going to have to hire someone after the fact. There's now going to be animosity involved because they weren't a part of the design from the get-go. And it's not even an ego thing.
Right.
It's just like, why?
Right.
Because, you know, we're already super busy with what we're doing. The contractor's now stressed because there's a delay. The owner's now stressed because they thought that the contractor could handle everything. And that's just not the case. So if you have an architect on from the get-go, then you're just going to make your life way easier.
And when you as an individual, or architects as a whole, when they're going through the whole design process, what are all the different things? So obviously we know the overall design, you know, we know what products are going to be specified, you know, where does like the mechanical and the plumbing and everything else fall into play in this design process?
Nowadays it should be talked about constantly, because as soon as you change the size of a duct, because now you want some really cool linear slot diffuser that's 6 feet long,
right?
That's going to change the size of the duct. But we wanted 2-inch drop ceilings from a concrete slab. It's not going to happen now, right?
Right.
So honestly, to do the traditional bringing them in.
Yeah. And and just from being in our position, there's some cool products out there. Are you familiar with like high velocity air duct system and stuff where you can, you know, get away with smaller ducts and things like that? I mean, so there are solutions, but you're not going to get away with the 2-inch drop.
No, and listen, this is what I love about working for a manufacturer as well. I learn about how we are constantly innovating to respond to these design challenges, because listen, people just don't want to see anything, or if they do want to expose infrastructure, they want to do it in the most intricate way, which obviously drives the cost. I'm like, keep staring at your ceiling now, because you guys have this stretch ceiling, which I know a lot about because I specify them a lot in my projects, where it's incorporating the lighting, the HVAC in this one constant element where there's no seams. You know, you can't really do that with drywall in an easy way. Obviously, once it's all finished, painted, mudded and painted, it will be seamless, but it's very expensive. And honestly, there aren't many skilled people out there that can do it anymore on a dime.
Right.
We're just in a shortage of everything. So the easier manufacturers can, you know, can make our lives easier, it's going to happen.
Right.
But having an architect kind of guide you through that process is, in my opinion, the only way, because builders just, they think they know, but unfortunately they don't. And honestly, they don't care. I'm not talking negative. My dad was a contractor, coolest man ever. but they just really don't care. They just want to get the job done, get paid, and move on to the next.
Absolutely. And an architect's job is to find, you know, not only great solutions to help the budget, but the overall aesthetic, be able to achieve ultimately what it's kind of like. I feel like the architect is more of the, you know, the homeowner or whoever's hiring them, like, best advocate for what ultimately they want to achieve.
That's a beautiful way of putting it. I mean, we legally have to be your advocate, but at the same time, like, we want the project to be as successful as possible, no matter how expensive or inexpensive it is.
Right.
If something falls down and hurts somebody, it's on us. Are we going to maybe want to point the finger at the contractor? Sure, because of bad workmanship. But at the end of the day, we want to prevent anything like that from happening ever. So it's in our best interest to always just be on top of it. And ethically, we and morally, when we're talking with clients and builders, like, we're not trying to annoy them.
Right.
We're literally looking for their best interest at all times, talking to them like a family member. Contractor's not always going to talk to you like a family member.
Right. Because a lot of times they're the ones that cut corners, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and we and I hate using that phrase too, because listen, I've worked with some interesting characters in the construction field that probably shouldn't be doing it, but for the most part, the GCs that actually have the license. I'm not talking about qualifying,
right?
That's a whole nother
animal
that we get into. But the actual,
is that a Florida thing or is that everywhere?
It's everywhere, like. But in Florida, it's like it's crazy. The people that actually hold a general contracting license, to actually shake their hand physically, it's like less than 50%.
Right.
Even the people that act like that they are, they, you know, they know everything and they're doing everything under a certain license, it's a qualifier, we call it.
Right.
That's the majority of the time. And it's, I used to say it's scary, but it's just annoying now. Like, so if a qualifier wants to work with me, I just don't do it.
Right, right.
Anymore.
And so that's a key point for when somebody's going through the process, to know if they are actually a general contractor, if they hold the license, or if they have a qualifier.
So we're getting into it now. So the first thing I always recommend my clients to do is go on sunbiz.org and look the person up. Is the license with that person's name? Where's the address? You know, if you see anything on there that just doesn't look good,
right?
Or send it to me and I'll give you my opinion.
Right.
Just, you know, maybe move on to the next.
And that goes for insurance as well.
Yeah.
You know, so bringing it all back, a quick five reasons, top five reasons.
Putting me on the spot.
For, yeah. Well, it's a lot of what we just spoke about, but just to clarify, make it concise. Top five reasons for why hire an architect.
Okay. One, it's going to save time. 100%. I don't care if people say that it's not. Ultimately, it will. Two, easiness. Like, it's going to make the process a lot easier. Three, and this could probably go right after easiness, it's going to make it more fun, for sure. Because, listen, everyone wants to work with a designer. Even if you say you don't, an architect is very clever at letting a homeowner, the architect. So we're, even though it's our ideas, or no, it's you're giving us the ideas and we're just bringing them to fruition, but we're actually kind of making it manifest in your mind so that you're the master builder. I feel like the best architects do that for people because, right. You know, we're not here to say like I did that. We, you know, we're not Frank Lloyd Wrights. You know, we want the owner to definitely feel yet proud. Right. Well, we'll change the way that guy lived his life.
Right.
But yeah. Let's see, for legal, you know, the whole permitting thing, there's no way around it. You cannot get a permit, especially where we live, without a licensed architect or design professional with a stamp to for you to do the work. So, I mean, that's imperative. And then five, when an architect works in collaboration with the homeowner and they bring in a contractor as soon as possible, it's going to keep the cost down. It's collaboration is key. Doing it old school way where owner's working with the builder separately, working with the architect separately, that is how finger pointing can happen. So I think it needs to be a collaborative effort.
Right. And going off of cost, there's obviously a cost for the architect. What should people assume that cost is? Like, I'm sure there's a range percentage of the project, because ultimately what I want to get to is the fact that that cost offsets itself 100 times over to avoid, because the most expensive part of construction a lot of the time is when something is done incorrectly or wasn't addressed, and then the architect is obviously brought in and then it just gets...
Yeah, I could, by answering this question, I could get a lot of...
you could avoid it.
Yeah. No, I mean, listen, traditionally, construction costs help derive the architectural fee.
Right.
It was a percentage-based. I've tried it. It doesn't really work in what I do because my projects are so small. But let's just say an architect's doing a hospital or a school.
Right.
It's a lot easier to justify that fee because it's going to be a massive fee. But guess what? The project in design alone could be 2 years.
Right.
So they're going to need a large fee to cover them. And it's sad to say that by the time the project's done, especially through construction, they might break even.
Right.
And that's the great... That's even though I loved that I worked on massive projects like that when I was in firms as a small business owner, when I'm banging out houses, additions, interior renovations, I know it's going to take me only a few weeks to do, but I cannot charge off of a percentage-based fee. So, and clients don't want to spend an arm and a leg either for what they feel is something simple. So in order for me, and like I said, I'm into my fifth year of my own business now, so I'm still learning this, but so far my best way of pleasing everyone, including myself, is to do a certain dollar amount per square foot so that it's very easy for the client to just read, okay, my addition is going to be 1,000 square feet, and depending on how many design disciplines, so let's say architecture, structural, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, civil, however many of those are going to be required in the permitting process, it should be, in my opinion, for an architect to be profitable, at least $1 per square foot.
Right.
But if you're a very boutique firm, you know, they're probably going to be charging 10 plus.
Right. And that's a good point for people who are architects or becoming architects, studying to be an architect. It's probably another area that's not really covered in school as far as, you know, a lot of times people think, oh, the biggest is the baddest and I want to take on the craziest projects possible. But in turn, if you don't price it properly, you know, that could destroy what you're trying to accomplish because of the time and things that they're not accounting for because lack of experience.
Yeah, I mean, I'm extremely entrepreneurial minded. I've always been. However, when I do step into an office, you know, a firm, especially an established one, and I've got, I know some of the principals, but then I also know some of their recruits or interns or, you know, emerging professionals, because, you know, even whether I went to school with them, I may have taught some of them.
Right.
I love that whole environment. I mean, the architectural studio is one of the coolest spaces that you could work in. But if you want to have the ultimate life, it's going to be very tough, especially where we live in an affluent area. You know, you want the vacations, you want to be able to kind of go on boats and do things whenever you want, however you want. Working in an office is just extremely tough. So the sooner you can, even if you can find ways to still work with a firm and they still allow you to do your own thing. Back in the day, we called this moonlighting, which was like very frowned upon.
Right.
Or you have to sign some kind of non-compete. Listen, the 21st century is a whole different ballgame. If I'm upsetting any of my old mentors, firm CEOs, whatever, like, get over it. Because whenever we talk at a business lunch and they, you know, and they've got their vehicle that's $250,000 and they're trying to tell me to be humble, it's like you know what I mean? So it's you know, we have to, everyone needs to get paid, and most clients will appreciate that and will help you achieve that, and there's no reason for you to have to even justify it. And I kind of spent the first couple of years in business doing that, and you don't need to apologize anymore. You just provide the ultimate service, legendary service that you can do. It's going to improve, and definitely plan to profit for it, because you will not survive.
Right.
It'll be like the restaurant business. You know
what I mean? Exactly. That's a whole different story.
Yeah.
You know, so obviously, you know, people hiring architects, they bring people into the project. You know, a lot of times in construction, the way that everything really should be looked at, because it's a long process most of the time. I mean, building a house, it could take 12 months, 18 months, could take 24 months, just depending on the scope of what it is. It's a relationship. It's almost like a marriage.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I mean, when you go through it, you know, there's a lot of different factors that affects the relationship. But when you look at, you know, client relationship with an architect, like with yourself, what do you see the most important factors to make it go smoothly, you know, for what you look for in a client? Because, you know, obviously everyone has a right to also be selective with who they work with.
Yeah.
Are there certain factors that you can advise that, you know, when you're looking to hire an architect, you know, your mindset should be this way, or, you know, this is what's going to make the relationship really smooth? Obviously bringing together the architect, the builder, and whoever the client is number one. So that way everyone's on the same page. But what else would you say?
I mean, communication is key. It almost doesn't matter how good you are at drawing anymore. Everyone's good at drawing, you know, once you're a professional.
Right.
There's a certain standard of care, we call it, especially when it comes to legal terms. But yeah, I mean, if I don't like someone going into it, I probably, you know, won't want to work with them, and I'll refer them to someone else. But if you're already in it and the relationship has established, you've got a retainer, you've got a signed contract, I just let them know that I will answer the phone and email probably at any time, except for after 6 p.m. every day. And on weekends, you know, I'll text you back, but you cannot hassle me. You have to respect that I am a family man and things like that. But all those other times, I will definitely respond to you immediately. Like I treat it like, you know, my sister or my brother are calling me for help.
Right.
I just always answer the phone. I always respond to emails, you know, in less than 24 hours, like probably immediately. Honestly, when I get emails, I'll spend the end of my day 2 hours responding to everybody to show them that I care and I'm here and we're working on it. When I've worked in offices, because we're slammed, working on massive stuff, can get away with it in general. I mean, you could take days to respond to somebody, and that, and you know, a lot of people don't like that.
They get frustrated.
I mean, I don't like it. You know, I kind of, so yeah, communication for me is the best way to maintain any relationship, you know.
Absolutely.
Whether it's marriage or
everything.
Building.
Yeah. 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 I mean, because, you know, the thing is, I mean, everything isn't going to go smoothly, but addressing it and being
people
on the same page.
People just want you on their side.
Right. Exactly.
And until shit hits the fan, which you're preventing from happening, that's when someone knows that you've got their back.
Right.
And then that just develops this, credibility that I was talking about before, your reputation. Like, I have a reputation for just never leaving a client alone or behind.
Right.
I just had a project that took over 2 years to get a permit, and all it was an interior gut job on a condo on the 10th floor of a building. And long story short, it had a lot to do with the contractor, interior designer, who just kept dropping the ball on things. But when the client fired those two people, I stayed with them for every single, I could have left many. They even asked me, suggested, you don't have to deal with this. Like, we'll find someone else who can do it. And I said, you know what? I'm going to learn a lot from this. You guys are very awesome people. I want to see it through. Right. I always finish what I start.
Yeah. So, no, that's incredible. And, especially here in South Florida, the construction world, just people in general.
Take that money and run.
Seriously. And, it happens all too often. But, talking about everything and, that process, and you mentioned interior designers. Do architects and interior designers clash? Because I feel like, the architect is the realist, but really the one that's designing, so, the functionality of a home, but a designer is pitching the dream.
unfortunately, the interior designer profession lost its license in Florida a couple years ago. So you cannot call yourself a licensed interior designer anymore. If you became a registered architect in Florida, you were automatically considered a licensed interior designer as well. I think they got rid of that as well. So it's very tough for interior decorators to call themselves interior designers now. However, when you work with a good interior designer, gosh, do they make your life easier, because all I have to do now is just design the space, the structure, the shell. I don't even have to get involved in the material selection, the whole shopping and holding hands with the client.
Oh yeah, my that's goodness. A lot of time.
I can't do it.
Yeah.
I've tried it. I've walked through floor and decor with a client for 4 hours. I'll never do it again. Right. They were very happy with me, but I didn't get paid for that, really. So
that's a line item now.
So interior designers, though, that's their world.
Right.
They love that stuff, because when they see something, they're like, yeah, this is going to work, or no, it's not going to work. To me, I don't even care if it works, as long as it looks good and we finish the project. In interior designers, if you have a good one, they're going to make your life so much easier.
Right.
Just don't get hung up on them making a lot more than you.
Right.
So
right.
Once you get over that part, it's fine. But they don't have a license anymore.
Right.
So in their defense, or luckily for them now, they don't have that liability.
Right.
When you have a license,
it's liable. Liability. Right. So
if anything, we should be jealous of them. But there are the horror stories.
Right.
Where they can ruin your life, ruin a project, ruin a relationship. And that's the toxic part, which I know down here we have a lot of history of as well. But I've been fortunate to meander my way through those. And there are very good professionals who are just designers, artists.
Right.
And they just will make everything better.
And that's what it all comes down to, experience. Like, you have the builders that you've worked with that were great. On the contrary as well.
Yeah.
Designers that are great opposite as well. Yeah. When you're working with a homeowner, you're able to also help say, hey, if you're looking for this, here's a couple that I've worked with that it's been great experiences. So your experience is able to, and by hiring the architect first and starting, because they've worked on a lot of projects, and it's always good to get those referrals and references.
Yeah. Actually, doing this podcast right now, it's actually wanting me to revamp my I have a letter that is, it's almost like a weeding out process for clients. So as soon as someone wants to hire me, it's like a questionnaire, if you will, and if they're willing to do it, that's a good sign. If they're not willing to do it, then that's obviously
indicator.
But going back to what you just said, though, I have the exact same conversation with every client almost before they hire me or consider hiring me, and their first thing is always, how much does it cost to build?
Right.
And honestly, since COVID, it's tripled, sometimes more. So building something at the shell level for $100 a square foot, it just doesn't exist. What if I do it myself? You're not going to do it yourself.
Right, exactly.
No, owner builder. Yeah. And where high end was maybe $300 a square foot pre-COVID, that's the starting point now.
Right.
The projects I've been doing for the last 18 months, I'm doing stuff almost at the code level. There is times where I go beyond code in performance.
Right.
But most of my clients just don't want to pay for it because as long as it meets code, they're happy. But once you get into the interiors and you want the finishes to be at the highest level, like a 5-star hotel, which, you know, some of my clients do, and right. That's where they have to hire an interior designer. We're talking $1,000 plus per square.
Oh, point. Easy. Right.
And that's, you know, if that scares you, then, you know, let's stop talking about high end. Like, you know, just know that what you're going to pick is going to make you happy. It's going to look good. Don't worry about it. Just get the term high end out of your head. Cause as soon as you tell a contractor that.
Oh, absolutely. And a lot of people don't understand, like in their mind, something might be ultra high end, but in a contractor's mind, it's different because they're the ones working on it, you know, where, you know, everybody has like the problem with homeowners, not that it's a problem, but with homeowners, most of it comes down to the lack of education and understanding of what something really is.
Yeah.
And, you know, you probably fall into the place of being the educator.
Always. Yeah.
So something that I wanted to touch on before we wrap up is, you know, in the architectural world and development, whether we're talking about hotels, mixed use development, hospitals, homes, whatever it is, you know, buildings leave off a lot of emissions. You know, there's a lot of different things that the architectural, I feel like I could be completely wrong, are the ones that are really spearheading the effort to, you know, when it comes to LEED credits and certifications and things like that, because all of that is not only great for the environment, but also the property. And, you know, everyone's always after accolades and, you know, things like that. Speak to that for a moment.
So I love this question because it could go in many different directions, but I've been involved with a lot of AI, not necessarily podcasts, but panels lately, where I've been coordinating them and also facilitating and participating in as well. But with artificial intelligence, the role of the architect keeps coming up, and a lot of people fearful that it's going to change so much that the architect will disappear. And then there's a lot of people who are like, you know what, this is going to help us amazingly. And I am now definitely, I've more than leaned into that category, because you just cannot do a construction project without an architect. I actually feel that AI is going to help bring back the master builder mentality. Doesn't mean that we're the craftspeople or, you know, the physical framers of the project, but because we are so involved from the beginning to the end, the political part, the legal part, you're just not going to be able to, you wouldn't even want to do a building in the future without an architect, because even their guidance alone, like let's say we don't even need drawings anymore because our 3D modeling is, well, it's 4D now with time and everything. It's so sophisticated that we could just literally be scrolling on the iPad or the screens or our phones and be like, okay, yeah, that's how it goes together.
Right.
That would be amazing, because I don't like wasting paper either, going back to sustainability thing.
Right.
But there's no other person or professional that could help just make sure everything works. You know, engineers are super smart. They're arguably smarter than architects, but it's because they're very focused on one particular discipline.
Right.
Architects have to know everything. But in order to know everything, you have to know just little bits of it. But cohesively, it's a ton. And contractors like this like to say that they're the same way, but it's just not. Right. You know, we need them to construct. They need us to just make sure that it happens correctly.
Right.
You don't need to look at it as a hand-holding process or anything, but it's almost like the student and the teacher. Like, and they might take that offensively, so another way to reword it is that, you know, you just have a CEO and a CFO. Like you can't run a company without those two. You can't try and do the whole thing alone. So I foresee that being critical. And then when it comes to sustainability, you're right, the emissions, I mean, it's been fact since like 1990, over 40% of emissions come from buildings.
Wow.
You know, people think it's cars, but it's not.
Right.
cars are like less than 20%. We don't get me into the EV thing right. either, but yeah, it's we're doing a much better job. We're it doesn't need to be LEED to achieve that. Honestly, the codes are getting so much more stringent now that it's hard to not do a sustainable building if it's new construction.
Right.
Renovations, there's still a lot of loopholes in the existing building code that allow you to get away with things because it just financially will prevent a project from happening.
Right.
So building departments respect that. But in new construction, I mean, especially if you're doing a new home now and it's going to be a smart home on top of that.
Right.
I mean, there's no reason why every new house can't be net zero.
Right.
Off the grid potential. Our issue in the States is that most cities want you to be on the grid. They want you to use their municipal water system.
I feel like it's a control thing.
Oh, yeah, right. No, I mean, it's definitely control. So we can design to make them as sustainable as possible.
Right.
In respect to still being attached to the grid.
Right.
But it's going to get better. For yeah. Sure.
No, I mean, hearing you speak, I mean, it just sounds like the architect profession is just held at such a high standard.
Yeah.
And the ones that, have liability. I mean, not that other people don't have liability, but like, you reference the interior design industry, but there's always someone to blame for something. But, I feel like the architect is like the quarterback of the whole building yes. situation in the sense of,
yeah, I love that.
What's happening. So,
yeah.
It's amazing hearing you talk about all of the different components and just brings awareness to, for the industry itself, as far as the educators, where are the lacking or what do, young professionals or people graduating from programs, like what are the areas that they haven't even been exposed to yet, which is in a way a disservice, and what people should do when they're getting out of programs, when they're in, big firms, starting their own business, whatever it might be, all of the steps of the process, we really broke down, essentially what is an architect and how AIA is spearheading the efforts to keep the integrity of the profession, educating the profession, but also, bringing the camaraderie, bringing people together, bringing the construction businesses together with the ones that are specifying products, because, that's a great way for them to be able to communicate their message, educate people on the whys and what makes their product special.
Yeah. I mean, I want kids to know that being an architect is cool.
What movie was it where it was like an architect?
There's loads of movies now. what I was getting to though is that when I grew up, the whole becoming a doctor, lawyer, or maybe an accountant was like thrown out there.
Right.
Those are like the three professions I would definitely tell my kids to stay away from.
Right.
Because it's just like they're not fun, they're not sexy, and they're boring.
Right.
And they can make you extremely stressed.
Right. Like,
being an architect is so much fun. And when I was first starting out in my business and when COVID happened, I was going through this crazy flux of like not knowing what was going to happen. At that moment in my mind would have been the only time I may have told my kids, I don't want you to ever become an architect. But honestly, the education that we get can serve so many realms. I mean, marketing, if anyone understands marketing, I mean, that can save your life financially.
Right. Absolutely.
And architects are trained, like we are literally wired. Like we use both sides of our brain. We're not one sided.
Right.
That's just going to help you be the best contributing human being that you can. Because everyone always asks me, oh, what do you do for a living? It's like, what do you mean? We're human beings, not doings.
Right.
Right. And I don't want to just mention my career.
Right.
I want to start off with all the fun things that I do.
Right.
And that's why I always incorporate my family into AIA architecture and everything that I do.
No, it's amazing. It's amazing to see, how you as a professional operate, obviously family man, and just, you as an individual. It's amazing. And we're fortunate to have you here. And we're going to wrap up. But I want to leave everyone with that broken down version of top three questions to ask when hiring an architect, going back to whether that's education, experience, insurances, just like there's questions that people need to ask a contractor before hiring a contractor.
Yeah, I guess, education is number one because clients just don't know what they don't know. And then the things that they think they know, the architect's going to decipher that immediately. Going to the profession, but then also trying to incorporate AIA, education being number one. I think legal is just huge now. It's not really talked about. It's almost like people just take care of it privately, you know, with their own insurance policies, because legally you have to have that in place,
right,
in order to operate. But AI is doing a tremendous amount of that. But at the education, academic level, like colleges, universities, start doing that. Start talking about the legal. I know they touch on it like a hair, but no, right, it needs to be a full class. And then finally, I mean, for me, it's definitely the events. I mean, I'm selfish in that.
Yeah.
But I think that's key as well, because if you're not having fun, if you're not getting out there, if you're not networking, if you don't know what your peers are doing,
right?
I know sometimes when it gets to the very competitive level, people need to stay in their lane.
Yeah.
Well, you could easily figure that out if you know everybody, right?
So, absolutely.
that makes it easier for me. But yeah, so I mean, I'll leave it at that. Like education, legal, the camaraderie, if you will, all of those can segue into 100 different things.
But right,
for me, that's kind of how I'm operating right now anyway, just to make sure that I'm keeping myself in line.
Absolutely.
And feeling good about it in the same time.
Awesome. Well, we covered a lot today. Went over all components of what is an architect, the AIA, projects, everything else. Is there anything that we didn't touch on that you want to leave us with?
Probably not. I mean, it's still morning. I'm ready for a beer,
right?
Now.
Exactly. We're warming you up for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
But if somebody is listening to this and they want either, let's talk to the trade first, if they want more information on the AIA to find out, you know, next steps to become a member, what are those steps?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're local, whether it's Palm Beach, Broward, Dade, you can go on, I'll just say my website there, AIAFortLauderdale.com. And even if you get to our admin team, we will definitely point you in the right directions. But I know AIA Miami has their website. I don't know if it's .org or .com. Same with Palm Beach, AIAPalmBeach.org or .com. If you just Google AIA Palm Beach because you're in Boca, or AIA Fort Lauderdale because you're in Broward, AIA Miami because you're in Dade, you'll figure it out there as well. And we always have our address for our, you know, office headquarters and our number. And then each of us has an executive director, which then points you in the right direction.
Awesome. And for those who were listening to this, learning why they need an architect and they're building a home, remodeling a home, whatever that might be, how can they get in touch with you?
Well, my name again is RT Molinari. My email address is allterrainarchitect@gmail.com. Like I said, I email like texting, so not an issue. But I just want to let you know also that if you're going to look for plans by Googling them, and you're willing to pay anywhere from $500 to $2,000 for those generic plans of that ranch house in Colorado that's going to look super cool in the middle of your HOA development, just don't do it. Like, call us first. We'll talk about it. We're not trying to like just take, you know, the business.
Right.
Just don't go and like blow a couple of grand and then try and nickel and dime us afterwards because of your early mistake.
Right.
You know, we can have a really healthy conversation about, we want you to succeed. We want you to have the ultimate space that you deserve, that you worked hard for. An architect will truly make it happen, and they'll make the experience so much more pleasurable. Trust me.
Absolutely. And again, Artie, thank you for joining us. And for all of you, thank you for tuning in. For all of you who do not know who the Home Design and Remodeling Show is, we are Florida's premier destination for everything home design and home improvement. You can visit our upcoming Home Design and Remodeling Shows in Miami, Fort Lauderdale, and Palm Beach. You can go to our website at homeshows.com. Make sure you follow us at FL Home Shows. We always have, you know, the latest content, inspiration, education, everything that you need to know for South Florida home building, home construction, and everything else. But make sure you hit the subscribe button to our channel to get all of the latest in home design and home improvement. But until next time, stay tuned for the next episode.